You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
Good evening, everybody. It's Monday night. It's 7:01 on the East Coast. We are broadcasting live right out of New York. You're hearing this probably in the future, though. You're probably in the future. Because I would say about 90% of this show's listenership is all with the podcasts on SoundCloud. And, you know, I know a lot of good stuff about the SoundCloud stats. There's always dozens of... We're always getting close to 75 to 100 listens over there on SoundCloud, which I love. But the thing is that I don't know anything about iTunes. And I'll tell you that my first push, when I really started seeing the value in doing the podcasts and podcasting in general, I really just started falling in love with the idea of being able to upload these transmissions from wherever you are, and just people are able to just connect. And I love spoken word, and I just feel cozy talking to you guys every night. And I love when you guys talk back to me, so that's cool. I hope I don't sound too lonely. I'm not that lonely. I've got great companions. And you guys are good companions too. But I don't know anything about the iTunes listenership, because they don't provide any of that stuff. Now, you can't host your podcast on iTunes. You can only host it elsewhere, and you can syndicate it. You can put your RSS feed into iTunes, and it'll pull the podcast there and all the episodes as you upload it automatically, which I think is just also awesome. You can get this podcast on Google Play and all that, Stitcher, TuneIn, all that stuff, and more. All throughout the fall of last year, fall of 2015, all I did, I went through individual contacts. I reached out to a couple hundred people that were in my phone, that were on my Facebook. I went individually. Just people I knew. People I knew that were cool enough and that were nice enough, and that I've always known them to be supportive people, people I can approach and not feel awkward about. There were a couple people that surprised me, and they were surprisingly stiff with me. But, you know, I went to everybody I knew within the first couple of weeks of the podcast being up on iTunes and asked them please to subscribe and you know, rate it, and, you know, leave some reviews, and honest reviews too. I said, you know, even if you don't like what I say, and if we don't make disagreements, can you please just make a semi-positive comment about the way that the show is run, at least, you know? And I got a lot of people that were just so helpful and so supportive, and it was really a heartwarming time. And for like the first 8 weeks that the podcast, that any podcast is listed on iTunes, you have an opportunity to be in the new and noteworthy section on iTunes. And for the entire 8 weeks, I was in the top 10, if not the top three in the news and politics section, which was awesome, because during those 8 weeks I was like beating out people like Lena Dunham. Ugh, that was awesome. If I can just say that I was beating her for even just a couple of minutes, it's a feather in my cap. But in either case, I wish I knew what I'm getting at is, I wish I knew what the entire picture of the show's reach is. You know, I don't expect people to be able to get home in time for the 7 p.m. live taping. A lot of people do, but and hopefully that grows. But in either case, I enjoy what I'm doing, and I really appreciate you guys for coming out. Also, I want to give a big shout-out to Moonlit Alter in the chat room, Moonlit Matt. Moonlit Matt, I told you guys two shows ago that I had finally launched a Patreon to help fund the show. You know, just so that all the work I put into it, there's a little bit something there. But primarily, it was to create some packages, three packages in total, that I can give to businesses that might be interested in supporting the show and funding the show going forward. But of course, you start a Patreon, anybody can contribute. So I put it out there that, hey, if you like the show, drop $1 in a month, $5 in a month, whatever you like, if you want to at all. I think that was a pretty fair exchange. Of course, you can not contribute anything, and I'm totally fine with that. But Moonlit Matt in the chat room, very symbolically pledged $17.76 a month to this show. $17.76. And I think as of right now, he's still the sole contributor. So, like I said on Tumblr and everywhere else, Matt, I am working for you right now, buddy. That's it. You are my employer for a whopping $17 a month, which I think actually shakes out to $16 once Patreon takes their cut. So, in either case, that is still out there. Patreon.com/ quite frankly. Now, what do I want to talk about tonight now that I wasted the first 7 minutes? Well, I know that we have a lot of spiritual people out there. And I know we have people out there that just like to think outside the box and they're into quirky things. They're very educated. They're very, very, I don't know, heady. And I like that. But I gotta say, the dreams I've been having lately, okay? The dreams I've been having lately have been very, very odd. Now, I'd have a couple of friends that started dream journals, and in my case, they would be nightmare journals, because for years now, my dreams can be on a scale of I don't remember what I dreamt, to it was a neutral, random, what the hell just happened dream, or a completely disturbing, fuck, just a mind fuck, okay? Saturday night, and most of the times, even the disturbing dreams, I'm used to now, so I just sleep through them. I wake up in the morning, and I'm just kind of like, ugh, whatever. And let me tell you something, that also contributes to a lot of other shit, too. Now, I want to get to the, we're going to get around to this dream, but I want to get to the bottom of what the hell is going on here, because there's obviously some emotional problems going on here, because what the hell kind of baggage am I taking into the dream world? Obviously, the stuff that we talk about in this show is having residual effects, because a lot of my dreams lately have been having to do with me fighting terrorists and cult members and all that stuff. You'll hear about Saturday nights. But in either case, I've always been one to say that I would prefer every night to go to bed physically exhausted, just spent, you know? Absolutely spent. Physical exhaustion is something that I welcome every damn night. A really hard physical day, labor, a good workout, coupled with just a bunch of things that you took care of in your life. Things that you wanted to stay on top of, things you want to stay current with. You got to read for an hour. You got to work out for 40 minutes. You got to do this and that. You got to write a little bit. Things that I enjoy doing, I don't know what it is for you. Call in sometime, tell me. The Skype is on. I made sure it was on before we went live this time. Now, the worst thing in the world, and I know that many of you out there have to know this and have to agree with me and know what I'm talking about. The worst thing in the world is to go to sleep emotionally exhausted. Not physically exhausted, emotionally exhausted. Physical exhaustion, you wake up the next day, you're a little stiff, you're a little sore, but it's good because you know you did something good the day before. You know, you wake up one day and after you sprain your ankle, and that's, you're debilitated. That's completely different. You wake up the next day and you've got that lactic acid type of burn in your quads and your ass and your abs. You can't even cough or laugh or sneeze because you have such soreness all over the place, your back is all ripped up and stuff, you feel good. That's something that you can walk around all day. It's kind of like a badge of honor. Like, yeah, I'm sore. I can't wait to do it again. But when you go to sleep torn up emotionally about something, where you've been thinking about something, you're in a little bit of a predicament, whether it be financial, whether it be a relationship woe, you know, a health concern of somebody you love, anything that weighs on you, problems at work, you name it. Everybody's crosses are the same size. They just come in different colors. And there's no sleeping that one off. It's waiting for you. It's waiting for you on the other side of that that sleep, that rest that you have. And if you go into sleep already worried, usually the sleep itself is going to be shallow and labored and broken up and all that stuff. And that's what has been happening to me. Like, last night was not that much better than Saturday night's sleep because I was up every 25 minutes, had to turn over. And we were watching Homeland, okay, on Showtime. And we're getting everybody nice and caught up with this. But we're in season 4. And this is when, you know, the compound in Pakistan gets raided by terrorists. I think it's Pakistan. But in either case, there's a lot of just weirdness there. There's terrorist abductions. There's Taliban all over the place. And there's also just the exposure to a depiction of the ruthlessness that we know exists. You know, if you're following the news, like you know that we do on this show, there's a lot of talk right now with the State Department, whether or not they are going to back off of their indoor, or at least their open endorsement of the Free Syrian Army, which opposes Assad in the Syrian civil war, because of course we want to take Assad down at all costs. Our endorsement and our support of the FSA is kind of teetering on the brink right now, because a week or two ago, all that footage of the 10-year-old that was beheaded by these opposition forces that we're supposed to be friends with surfaced, and we're like, oh my God. You know, to see a 10-year-old laid out in the back of a pickup truck's flatbed and have his throat cut and his head held up like it's a fucking trophy this is just what's going on every day. This is what's coming into Europe. This is what we have a very real chance of facing in the Western Hemisphere as well, on top of all of our other problems. So all of this stuff culminates into what are the last things you think about before you go to sleep, or what's subconsciously seated in your brain before you go to sleep. Because, of course, when I do go to bed, I put on The Office, put on, you know, Parks and Recreation. That 70s show has been on a lot lately. Just, you know, really light, easy stuff to make you feel at peace before you go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Hasn't been working that much lately, though. Saturday night, listen to this. Now, let me get something up here. I want to make sure that we have some good music on for this, because I'm going to need something. Where is... Give me a moment. I found it. Okay. So listen to this. And this happened at 4:11 a.m. I looked down at my phone. I wanted to see what time it was. It was 4:11. And I immediately unlocked my phone and started texting myself everything that happened. And that's when I realized enough is enough. I need to keep track of what the hell is going on, because I want to get to the bottom of this. So, mind you, this is dream world. So if there's not context, something doesn't make sense, there is that sense of randomness here. But there was a husband and a wife in this scenario. It was all at night. And husband and wife, they're getting torn apart by a child's recent abduction. And it's shown to me in this dream that the child was abducted by a cult. I'm not going to say ISIS. I'm not going to say it was Islamic or anything like that, because the setting of it was actually in a church or a cathedral. Going to get around to that soon. The husband and wife, they get torn apart by their child's abduction in this dream. The husband is really, really, and I, for some reason in the dream, and of course I know that you're supposedly everybody in your dream, I'm drawn to the husband's grief, because obviously he is thinking primarily about the child, and he is torn apart. But at the same time, the wife is so distraught that she just doesn't focus on the husband at all, and there's no unity there, and he's not only grieving what is a terrible situation with the sudden loss of their child, but he also feels like he's losing his partner, which we'll talk about in a little bit too, what I think that means. And the husband is really trying to get through to the wife, and he loves her very much, but he's helpless and afraid. So helplessness and being afraid is a theme of this dream already. And the wife is only focused on the child, and her frustration only continues to mount with the husband. Okay? Obviously, you want something to happen. You want to be able to be the one that can make a change. But at the same time, because you're so frustrated and because you're so helpless yourself, I'm talking about the wife, you tend as a human to look around and see if there's somebody around you you could blame for not doing enough themselves. So in this dream, the husband is trying everything he can to not only find the child, but also to keep the wife calm and to love the wife and to just be a good husband, be a good system of support. She, in her dismay, is not seeing what he's trying to do and how he's trying to break through, but in her dismay, blaming him subconsciously in some things, even if it's just with the way that she's stiff with him. So the wife is focused only on the child, and her frustration only continues to mount with the husband. She would actually take losing him over the child. This is verbatim what I sent to myself moments after I woke up, so I understood it better coming out of this fog. That last sentence right there, she would take losing the husband over the child. Okay? Here's the next part. They get a tip or something that the child is going to be harmed or killed at a certain time at a certain church or a cathedral. Okay? It was not your run-of-the-mill small chapel or anything like that. It was a cathedral, these large towering spires into a night sky. It was dark, overcast, but it wasn't raining. Cloudy, dark night, little bit of wind, but just a gray, dark gray evening. And I remember seeing the cathedral spires up against the backdrop of this really chilling night sky. So the husband is hobbling along behind his frantic wife. He's trying to keep up, but he's also trying to, he's trying to make a heartfelt pledge of loyalty to her and the son. I don't know what he was trying to say. I have some things written down here. But he says, obviously, the attempt was very pitiful and pathetic. And the wife disappears behind the front door of the church, which was actually left open. So not only was this tip left behind so that they know that the child is going to be there with the abductors, but the front door of the church, of the two heavy front doors, they were cracked open by a couple of feet to almost like welcome them in. She disappears behind a dark door, which has been left open, leaving the husband to finish his plea of support and love despite his helplessness alone on the front steps of the church. And I wrote this down as a quote. I said, I don't know much, but I know I love you two more than anything, and I promise I'm going to make things better in whatever way I can. But like I said, she disappeared behind the doors before he can finish this, and he's just left there on the last steps of, the entrance of the church to say this by himself, completely realizing at that point that it was falling on deaf ears. So this was, it was adding to the nerves that I was feeling inside this dream. And the remorse I was feeling for the husband, to be honest. So it was enough to send him into tears, muttering, well, somebody has to be able to hear me. I can't really be alone for this. But no one does hear him, and yes, he is alone. The last thing I remember was the abductors are part of some kind of a cult, a religious cult that could be many different things. Like I said, there was nothing that was identifiably Islamic about this. Although the fact that this happened inside of a, you know, let's keep going. The abductors are part of a cult, and the kidnapped son was with them, and they planned to kill him. It's very obvious that the plan was to kill the child, and it was a boy. Now, they had him kneeling down up on the balcony where the organ pipes are, and also where the choir sings, and the organ player and the choir sings during any kind of a service there. And there's also a glow of some candles and the sound, and of course, what we have there is a really, really weird thing here now, because this is where the death happens. And they have the kid on his knees. He's obviously very, very scared, and they have his head pulled back as if they're going to slice his throat open. But they don't cut his throat. They don't take off his head. Instead, they force feed and drown him with a bucket of paint. I don't know the color of the paint. I just know that it was a bucket of paint. And when both of the parents, both the husband and the wife, run into this chapel, this cathedral, they are actually led to the scene of the murder by the sound of this gurgling death, this terrible death. And by the time they get there, it's too late. The killers had timed everything perfectly so that the horrifying scene was just, once again, too little, too late. So they flee by the time the parents get to the choir balcony and the family unit has been left in complete ruin. That's just pretty much where it ends. After that, I woke up. I don't know if I yelled. It wasn't a scream. I definitely woke up with some exasperation there. And Lauren was able to, you know, she put a hand on me, and she knew I probably went through something there, but I don't know what the hell this shit means, man. Now, I have a lot of... I understand that losing people, the fear of losing people, and of course this external fear of everything that's going on in the world, you just don't want to see things happen to the family. You don't want to see things to happen to your close, the people in your inner circle, whether they be blood or whether they be your chosen family. And as you get older, your chosen family becomes a lot more important because blood tends to tend to, you know, their own little circles. So, I don't know. I don't know anymore. But it was a very, very uncomfortable Saturday night. I woke up at 4:10, and I didn't get back to sleep until maybe about 7. I tossed and turned for 3 hours straight after that dream. It was a horrible, horrible night's sleep, horrible experience, and it just hasn't been getting better. And what I'm thinking is that not only am I going to start the dream journal, because like I said, none of my dreams are usually good, so I want to be able to, I don't know, put an anthology of these stories out, maybe complete the stories, make something positive out of them if I can. If I can publish them, then let me do them. I mean, it's not like I'm ripping anybody off. You know? I mean, even though it did have a little bit of an Angels and Demons, Dan Brown type of a feel. But give me a call right now. The number is, well, the Skype is ZenLive TV, ZenLive TV, ZenLive TV. That's the Skype. Call in. Let me know what you think about the dream. Let me know about things that you've been dreaming that have been comparable to that. I'm a lot more interested in nightmares than I am anything else. I'm not going to question why something makes me happy. Please, at this point, I would very much welcome it. But that's just not how it's been lately. So let's get at it. Give me a call. Other than that, what else is going on out there? It's 7:25 and the monologue is just starting to to creep to a close. I don't know. You have a lot of things that I've actually like that are happening around people like Hillary Clinton right now. And that is that the topics are drifting toward her state of mind and her mental health and her physical health and all these things, because I'm telling you, these are people that are meddling with very dark powers, and it's having effects on them, okay? The Clintons are physical wrecks right now, and I don't know what the hell. We started covering this a couple of weeks ago, and of course, months ago before that. We always lend the thought that these politicians, especially the establishment ones that are really in there ingrained, and we talk about dynasty families and the chosen ones and all that stuff. Those are people that really have, they really have something going on there, and they're not human. To the way that, you know, you talk about human beings and what you're supposed to be experiencing and what humankind has been about, then there's people that go off the beaten path. They start slinking away from real humankind. You know, they're detached from reality. They haven't cut their own meat in how many decades. Okay, don't talk to me about being part of you're representing the working people when you haven't cut your own meat in years. When you have to stage photos of you flipping over a steak on a grill at some beefsteak a gathering somewhere to show people, look, I can flip my own meat. Bullshit. Let's stop this. Stop this nonsense. And I don't know. There's a lot there. I have a couple other things here that I want to talk to that are a little bit more off the beaten path, because I don't want to talk about pure political stuff anymore. Not for as much as I can help this week. Although there are some things that need to be spoken about. Trump proposed the moratorium on new financial regulations, and some of his tax ideas were actually very, very heartwarming to me, especially as a business owner. 15% business tax. Oh, my God. And, of course, Hillary Clinton called that trickle-down economics, which we can go into that in another episode. I would just need to get all of my my reading material on what was actually, you know, what was first dubbed trickle-down economics, which of course was known as Reaganomics to other people, and what kind of growth actually happened between 1981 and 1989. We should take a look at that. And what actually easing off of people who create jobs and create business really does do for everybody else, and how 20 million jobs were created in the decade of the 80s because of easing off the people who actually do help the economy, not the demagogues that are trying to kill everybody. The Olympics, the opening ceremonies were disastrously bad to me. I know some people would probably think that they were cool or something like that. I thought it was terrible. I thought it was poorly rehearsed. Oh my God, when they were worshiping the favela life out there, where everybody is throwing all these white cubes down from stair to step to step to step, and then they tried building this wall, and everybody was screwing up building the wall. Nobody was in the right place. They had to turn all the cubes over, and things were going wrong. And then, like, during the parade of nations, you have all these athletes coming out, and it sounded like four bands were playing three different songs. Two bands obviously were playing the same song on top of each other. Like, the music felt like it was layered, and there were different songs, and people are dancing, and I get it. You're in Brazil. You gotta really lay on the Latin flavor, but it was so weird. I laughed. I was just laughing the whole time. It was terrible. Vancouver was a little weird, but it was okay. Beijing, I remember, I was really, really impressed by. You have 4,000. Even I remember talking about Beijing. I brought it up with my buddy Rob when we were working out the other day, and he actually brought up the actual number. I forget that it was 4,000 people doing Tai Chi together. And it's really unbelievable to see all the different things that are happening out there. And of course, in Brazil, in the midst of all their political upheaval, their economic upheaval, of course, the pollution, they're talking about global warming and all that stuff. And I'm sitting there going, you know, not for fucking nothing. But free market economies, or at least freer market economies, especially over here in the U.S., has time and time again produced and continues to produce, just by its very nature, more efficient, cleaner technology and business practices. Because, of course, with efficiency comes lower cost, and it widens your profit margins. Okay? Now, of course, companies that are caught polluting and destroying local ecologies and all that other stuff and causing real damage should be prosecuted and held accountable. And, you know, like BP should have. You know, BP got a little bit of a bailout there. But then again, they got to pay off. They paid hefty fines and all that stuff, like, for what they did to the bayou down there in the Gulf region. But for the most part, you look at Brazil and places like China. China, where you have to wear your smog mask on most days of the year, especially there around Beijing and all that. And then you have Brazil, where a lot of our Olympians that are going to be competing in the water sports that take place outside, whether it be the rowing or anything else, I mean, they have to wear special protective toxic waste suits that the weeks leading up to the games, the sludge that was inside in the water was turning the hulls of all the boats out there in those bodies of water that are going to be used for the games brown. They're turning white hulls brown. And we have to listen to global warming bullshit? I'm like, if continents like South America and countries like China and the rest of Asia took care of their shit, I mean, you wouldn't need to. Who really needs to go and front the bill for them? Clean up your own shit. Aside from the fact that the ice caps are coming back faster than anything, and that more carbon testing is showing that the existence of carbon is I have to get this. I have two of them over here that I read through yesterday. I shouldn't have said that because I was not saving it for today. I don't want to jump on that and sound like a heel. So we'll save that for tomorrow. I just thought that was ridiculous. And then of course there was a lot of one world bullshit about we're all the same. It is ridiculous for me to think that a once every 4 years event that to me has just been destroyed by commercialization and might as well only been resurrected because of commercial interests. I think that NBC within the first couple of nights got destroyed in the press because of how many commercial breaks they took just within 20-minute spans of the opening ceremonies. And you think about it, everybody shows up to these events, and they're competing, and they're winning medals, and only three people can place, which means the rest of everybody are losers. You go home, you competed, you lost. So we're not all equal. You show up to compete. Nobody's equal. You have no country is equal from the other one. No person is equal. You have equal opportunity. Outcomes are never going to be equal. So this bullshit, I'm sorry. I know that you can say, you can generalize it. You can water it down. You can say we're all part of the same. We're the human race. Listen, we're talking about a 10-day event where the world, all the countries from around the world send their best to try to be the best. Which means that somebody else is not going to be as good. So don't start bringing there's ties and nobody's loses stuff into the Olympics, please. All this stuff just kills me. Kills. To hear that stuff go, oh, God. God. And then there was this one Olympics commercial for the American Olympics, and you had this one weightlifter. She's like, I'm not an immigrant. And then you had Venus Williams. I think she said, I'm not black. And then you had somebody else say, I'm not Muslim. Somebody else, I'm not this. I'm an Olympian. I was like, oh, I thought they were going. And then afterwards, they say, let's get rid of the labels. I was like, oh, I thought everybody was going to say I'm an American. That would have been good, even though you still are bringing up labels to talk about labels. It's the constant peddling is getting so exhausting. It's not inspiring. There used to be a way where these types of human interest stories, these types of, you know, these narratives of overcoming something, they filtered through naturally. And the world, because we were so enthralled by them, we took note and we were inspired. But these, it's so spoon-fed and so exhausting and so divisive in its feeble attempt to be unifying that you don't even want to turn the TV on sometimes. It really is like that. And to be honest, I watched 25 collective minutes of the entire opening ceremonies. Lauren was watching it with her sister Jess, and I filtered in and out. I was eating a cheeseburger in the kitchen. I came in, watched for a few minutes, left when I was getting nauseous, and I came back in. And to be honest, I've only watched a few events so far. The cycling was pretty cool. I really like the events. If you've seen the cycling course, that was a really beautiful course. I wish I could just walk that course. Gypsy, I see you over there. Were you able to see the cycling at all? Did you watch anything of this?
Not really. I watched a little bit of the opening. It paled in comparison to China's 4 years ago, which was amazing.
I was so impressed by China.
Oh, it was the greatest Olympic opening ceremony ever.
Man. Next to Ali, yeah. Lighting the torch.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not an Olympics person. I'm with you. It's a lot of let's hold hands for however long it is, and then let's go back to fighting each other.
Totally. You know? And I love how they say, oh, the unity. Meanwhile, outside, we hear stories of the Lebanese athletes that refuse to get on a bus with Israeli athletes, mm-hmm. or they refuse to let Israeli athletes get onto the bus with them.
Right.
And you think about all this stuff, like, oh man,
yeah.
It's you can't even sell this stuff. I mean, let's just make it Coliseum games again.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not at all suggesting that we should stop doing the Olympics. I think it's a very cool format for athletes. You know, I think it's very cool to see, you know, these top athletes around the world just go at it and compete. But I'm just not a fan of the pomp and circumstance at all. It's nauseating. You know, it's just too much sugar.
Yeah.
I just don't believe it. I just don't believe you. You know what I mean? I don't.
Now, tell me something.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch television now, whether it be some talking head talking about the election, whether it be a sporting event, whether it be an awards ceremony, no matter what it is, who do you believe anymore? I just can't believe. Like you said, I don't believe you. Please walk away.
Yeah.
I mean, when I watch the Yankees now, they don't get political or anything.
Yeah.
But I just wish that there was a way to mute all of the commentary and let me just watch what is being televised.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I know your feeling on it. I tried to watch some of the DNC.
I watched some.
I couldn't watch any of it.
I watched whatever I watched here in passing.
I couldn't watch more than 5 seconds of it at a time. It was just nauseating.
You want to talk about I don't believe you? I remember the first night of the DNC, everybody noticed. Well, first of all, the DNC and the RNC. I'm watching these, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm looking at the setup there and the big screens and how everybody looked in front of those big screens.
Okay.
And I'm saying to myself, yo, this looks like it's straight out of V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
There it was it looked like a technocratic hell.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
totally.
But
totally.
The DNC, we noticed that there was no American flags there.
Okay.
There were Palestinian flags and everything, Mexican flags and gay flags and the whatever. But
there's no American flag there?
At the first, everybody was like, where the fuck are the American flags?
There's got to be.
Somebody mentioned there's nothing there, and everybody was noticing it. And it got so much press.
Uh-huh.
The second night, there were so many American flags, you could have tripped over them at home, Gypsy.
You should have just taken one from the RNC, the one that they were covering up the protesters up with.
Dude, it's like you could have tripped on these at home. I was like, right. Oh, my God.
But that's just the thing. Then they overcompensate in the other way. It's just like, why do you people have no balance?
There's
like,
no modesty.
Your focus groups are horrible.
It's terrible. And then, I mean, once again, they say, oh, well, they said something about military presence. They didn't have anybody there that was pro-military. What do? They dug up a Muslim member of the military, which is like,
yeah.
Listen, just why did you have, it's like, we understand, we know what you're doing.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not genuine. Holy shit, man.
Yeah.
I think like the parents of militaries, and that's when they brought out.
Are you talking about the cons?
I don't know if it was the cons just yet.
Okay.
Because that was the second night, but.
I don't know.
Whatever.
I don't know the order, but.
Because I mean, the cons started making all these appearances afterwards, and they got bigger and bigger.
Right.
But it's just like, listen, I know what you're doing. We all know what you're doing. It's just why.
I felt that way about the RNC, the little bit that I could take. I mean, it was just, I don't know, just the rhetoric and the tone in both sides. I'm not favoring either side. I just, who talks like this? Who talks like this? Who? I mean, that's my biggest issue is when these politicians are trying to relate to the average voter and really get in there so you can understand where they're coming from, where they're going to help you. There is not one iota, not one tonal iota in their voices that sound like you understand what the hell I'm going through as a regular person. Not that I'm even struggling that fucking hard personally.
Yeah.
I just don't even think we can sit down and have, I don't even believe we can sit down and have a beer together.
Right.
And not saying I need to have a beer with my president, but I'd like to know that maybe he did years ago. Some of these people look like they just had,
you know.
And
I just had a thought on that. You said something. Go ahead.
Side note, did you see the trailer for Dunkirk? Is it Dunkirk?
No.
The Battle of Dunkirk?
Is that? No.
You got to see it.
What's this?
It's a World War II movie.
Who's in it?
I don't know if any big names, but Nolan directed it.
Really?
Christopher Nolan. The trailer looks ridiculous. Dunkirk. It's about the Battle of Dunkirk. It's a surprise. I don't want to get into it because I don't know, but you have to see this trailer.
Oh, I totally will.
You have to see this trailer. I didn't get this excited about a movie that I wanted you to see since Revenant. And you remember how excited I was before everyone knew anything about it.
That was good,
it.
Man.
Yeah.
Revenant was definitely good. It was long as hell, but it was good. It was a journey.
I mean, I was just talking to Anthony out there, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it. He is totally convinced, and I'm pretty convinced now, that Trump is a Democratic troll. This is all intentional.
Well, listen, he's not. At no point should anybody have thought that he was conservative. I mean, he's this. We said it from the beginning. He's a New York Democrat.
Yeah.
I mean, when he wasn't, he always talked about. He always identified, I think, publicly, even back to the 80s, because you know what? We know everything we needed to know about Hillary Clinton. And everything that she does and everything she hasn't done has been on the books. What everybody should be doing is listening to every interview he's had in front of a television camera for the last 30 years. And I've been doing that, and he always kind of identified as Republican in front of a camera. But, you know, you're a real estate developer in New York.
Yeah.
You are funding people like the Clintons for your own purpose. You are doing this.
He's funding
stuff.
Everyone. I mean, he's on both sides.
Right. But And you look at what he's saying, and he's not talking about just taking big cuts out of government spending.
Yeah.
He's talking about being a little bit more America-centric, which I think is refreshing. Like I said, the only real thing that puts them aside is that his rhetoric is centered around the country in which we live, and it goes toward the American citizen.
Yeah.
Which is what, I mean, it's refreshing to hear, because over 10, 12 years now, it seems like we've been just getting melted away.
Yeah.
And I don't know, and especially, I mean, if you look at even Clinton, Bill Clinton, he actually had a pretty conservative idea about welfare, too, with the whole work for welfare.
Okay.
Work in exchange for welfare to at least, you know, keep that ethic there.
Right.
I mean, that was a Bill Clinton idea.
Yeah.
Things that you forget about. And when I looked at some of the tax things today, I'm thinking to myself, you know, Gypsy, as business owners, 15% for us is...
No, I hear you.
I mean, the day we start actually really making a lot of money is the day.
When 50% matters.
Yeah, 15%.
Yeah, I'm sure I haven't gone line by line through Trump's... all his, you know, where his stances on certain taxes are and stuff like that. I can't even begin to. I have not. I guess I've been more of the just kind of watching the talking points, watching the rhetoric. And it's unfortunate to him because there was, it might have been on MSNBC. There was a real moment, and it might have been Jack Tapper. I forgot who it was.
Jake Tapper?
Might have been Jake or one of those guys. Or no, Chris Dodd. It was Chris Dodd. He said there was a real moment when Trump actually, and he was speaking to what I was talking to, you know, last year, there was a real moment when he had everyone's attention. There was just this weird, gray, crazy moment where he might be that crazy crockpot businessman who could change the country and potentially, I guess, the world. But then he just went too far. It's almost like in Tropic Thunder, he went full retard.
At what point do you think he went full retard?
Probably in the past 3 weeks. I think this con thing is tipping him over. I think the judge thing was a big push, and I think it's just there's no break in between. It just feels like it's just week after week he is putting his foot in his mouth, and it's not even things that, again, you know, we talked about. It's not things he's actually doing. Or has done, but it's implication. Like, for example, when Hillary's or the DNC got hacked most recently, right? And people were saying it was the Russians. He just casually said, "Oh, well, it might be the Chinese." I personally don't know, but I kind of don't feel that a presidential nominee should just be casually accusing another country of hacking us.
Well, if he says it might be, accusing. See, when you talk about Russia and China, I mean, that's all that's on our politicians' lips anyway. It's what our Russia, China, and North Korea. It's all everybody's talking about. Could be the Chinese. Could be the Russia. For him to say it might. I mean, listen, there's no love lost between us and China. Absolutely not. Because somebody gets up and speaks openly about it, I don't think that's. It's no worse than the gaffes that Clinton had when she was actually in office. The whole reset button thing with Russia, and
yeah.
I mean, you're talking about people who are actually in power there. Yeah. I really think that I don't know. Despite anything else, I think that he would actually get along with them a lot better. And to be honest, is any candidate in here really good? No.
No, none of them are.
But,
and I'm not. This is not a ploy for Hillary at fucking all. But I just think he's just putting his foot in his mouth, and it just makes it really hard for people that the undecideds to vote for him. You know, the educated, educated whites. I saw one CNN poll that said, and this is probably exaggerated, but not too far. It said Trump has 1% of the black vote right now. 1%. It might be 10, but he ain't getting us. He's not getting the Spanish vote. He's getting, you know, mostly, you know, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think he's getting a lot of poor whites, middle class, some. But he's not getting the educated whites. You know, Romney got the educated whites.
We need a swing, man. Honestly, listen, There's no ideas in the Republican Party. Then again, Donald Trump is not a member of the Republican Party. His business acumen is something that I think is a strong point. You can say, you can bring up the bankruptcies and all that, but think about what bankruptcies are and how they could be used to restructure businesses.
Absolutely.
And anybody who is in the business of creating business and getting in on it and investing and whatever, you're trying things out. Failure rate is high. But if you weather the storm, I mean, that's your personal stake is on the line.
Yeah.
And what is government? Government is not really a business practice. Government is changing an environment in which people are allowed to move and create their own businesses.
Right.
You know, it's not like Donald Trump is going to get into government and try to get the U.S. Treasury to fund Trump's stakes.
Right.
You know, that's not it. I mean, what you're doing as a guy who's dealt in business and has seen successes and failures, and of course, people, no matter, you know, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, you're going to try to prop up either his failures a little bit more for political reasons or his successes a little bit more for political reasons. But the real thing that I think people should take into account here is that the guy knows what environments are most healthy for a private business to grow.
Yeah.
What is the most healthy environment for a business owner, small, medium, or large, to be able to expand the business, put a little bit more back into the business, not have to cut corners, hire more people, you know, contribute more to their community? That's the type of acumen that I think people are talking about, which I think is totally fair. Now, I mean...
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I think that would be... That would be great. I don't know. I guess I wish he would get a cabinet position, but I don't know if president's the right role for him. Just personal.
You would want Trump in a cabinet position?
You know, maybe the Treasury.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
I can't.
If he doesn't run the table, he doesn't deserve to be in there taking up anything.
I think it's leading towards a landslide towards Hillary.
But you see, that is what we're all being meant to think. This is really, dude. This.
I just think it's his own doing. I don't.
He's shooting himself in the foot with a couple of things. The con thing didn't work well for him. That was something he should have just shut up about. You know, Hillary is not.
He lost a lot. I mean, who is it? The former CIA guy. He's saying he's not even safe for the car. I'm just saying, there's a lot of Republicans who are vocalizing that Trump is unfit to be the president. And they're using very strong language.
We've got 3 months.
It's not enough time.
He was ahead of her by 10 points the day after the DNC wrapped up.
And
now he's behind 10. How is there a 20-point swing? Dude, I don't trust any of these fucking things. And the whole environment of this election, this whole campaign season has flipped from week to week, that it really is just going to be a matter of what is the last thing that happened the day before election day.
I understand. I would say this. I would say the only way it would flip flop the other way is if there's Julian Assange releases, you know, one or two more big bombs.
Oh, they're coming.
If he does that, then you're absolutely right. And then he just starts ramping up if there's another, you know, God forbid, another homegrown terrorist attack or foreign.
Yeah. Trying to be quick. I know you're on here.
Hold on 1 second. Gypsy was just finishing up his thought.
I mean, I'm done. I'm just saying that basically, WikiLeaks needs to drop one or two more bombshells, and there needs to be a major attack in the U.S. for Trump to
have a
chance.
You know how sad that is? It's like, you got to drop like two more things.
See, that's...
All of the things. But no, what I'm calling about is you're taking in these polls of like 1,000 people or 1,300 and making like the statement abroad. I'm saying right now it's the swing states going to come down to, and I'm sure the swing states are going to go. I said 2 years ago the next president's going to be Republican regardless of who it is.
I just don't see, you know, that's a great point right there. When you think about who the hell said it. Oh, it was Barbara Streisand. She was cawing away on stage about last week or so, and she said something like, Hillary, you know, she was praising God for like Hillary's victory. I was like, wait a second. Does everybody remember? Does everybody think that we've had a Republican in office for the last 8 years? If things are bad right now, why do you think that 8 more years of the same exact thing, just up to a new level, is going to be a savior? This is like, and I saw a meme about, not a meme, but a quote about this. I forgot who said it. But this is like an alcoholic drinking more to try to get sober.
Yeah.
I don't understand the mentality of this. What else do you have to say, Matt? And by the way, thank you in person for your contribution to the show.
Oh, no, man, no problem. I got the 1776 to spare, the 1776.
Hell yes.
But no, the thing is, like, a lot of people, like, you know, you got to look. It really comes down to the swing states. You know, there are some states that have swung in the past, but it's usually, you know, what, like Ohio swings, Florida swings, a couple other states. Those are like the handful of states that will actually matter.
California
is not going to vote Republican ever.
New York's not going to vote Republican ever.
That's so, like, you can't take anything from there. Like, especially with polls, are bullshit to me. I don't put any faith in them. At all, considering it's like, oh yeah, we, like, all of America is, you know, Hillary's 13 points ahead. All America's like this. Like, we pulled 1,300 people in a country of over 300 million. Like, you can't base it off that. But like, what I'm saying is, it's the swing states are usually like, all right, let's do 8 years of Democrat. It's how it's statistically been these past elections. It's like, let's give 8 years to Democrats. All right, well, they've had their chance. Let's go 8 years of Republicans.
Yeah, it's the whole capsizing boat thing. Everybody runs to one side, then the other side, and nobody's finding principles in the whole mess of that shit. You know, it's like you said. It's so sad that everybody's like, well, maybe if there's another leak. I was like, do you understand what was just exposed? Everybody should have burned their Democrat members only jackets 2 weeks ago. The entire party has been exposed for being everything that they accuse everybody else of being by 10 times.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I'm hoping the swing states will see that, because if I posted on Facebook, one of my plenty of shit posts that I did, is that if you're going to truly do the lesser of two evils, really look at lesser two evils, Trump is clearly the lesser of two evils.
Yeah,
clearly. What people don't realize is what Trump is saying he wants to do, Hillary has voted on countless times. Like the barrier video that just got making its rounds on Tumblr from November 9th of 2015. She's like, I've voted countless times to build a barrier.
Yeah. Oh, I have all that.
Mexico, for example, like, she's voted to bomb Middle Eastern countries and all that. And it's like, Trump is Hillary light.
Yeah.
You don't know if he's going to get in there, and I know people have speculated. I don't know for sure. I'm pretty sure Hillary would do a lot more damage in four years.
By all
Trump
means. 4 years,
so
who knows?
So if it comes down to the swing states and those people are actually really thinking who's a lesser of two evils, I'm pretty sure they're going to bank on Trump being the lesser of two evils.
Well, you know what? Let's start off with this tomorrow night when we go live at 7, man. And because I have a couple of articles and a couple of thoughts on everything you just said, too, just to break this down a little bit more in an unbiased way. But thank you so much for the call, Matt, and I'll talk to you soon, brother.
All right, take it easy, brother.
Take care. All right, everybody, and thank you, Gypsy, for joining us for the show. Coming up next, 3 drink minimum, everybody. Be well, stay elevated, and just keep chilling. This episode will be uploaded by midnight tonight, yo.